session number 10613, rule 18.
Mr. Charles Burden Taylor, Reel 18. We were talking about what life was like in Germany when you were there with 9th Battalion, DLI at Hamer. What about the civilian population? How did they treat you, and how did this non-fraternisation order affect relationships?
Yes. I think at that time, I would say generally speaking, they didn't treat us at all. Their order really was that... it's on the basis of if we were on the footpath, they moved off. At that time, guard rooms usually had a Union Jack over the top of them, and any male folk going past always raised their hats to the Union Jack. We had certain civilian employed, and I think that...
What
that, in cookhouses, that sort of thing. And I think they just got on with their job. I don't recall a great number of civilians being about. The other side of the coin is that we still, at that time, were checking up that people weren't breaking the curfew. And I would go out with, or one of my officers would go out with, a small team in a vehicle or a couple of vehicles, and quickly surround a house and check that every home had a list of people who should be inside. And we would go and check those overnight to see that they were in. And if they weren't, then we had a report.
Was this every building or in every inhabited building in the town?
No, it could be any building or any in your area. Each company had an area for which it was responsible. And it wasn't necessarily, shall we say, in a street or that sort of thing. You would go out into the country and find... a house or a few houses together, or houses in the suburbs for that matter. Another duty was to go and make sure that the certain farms and farmers were in fact not being molested, because quite a lot of displaced persons there were about at this time, and particularly East Europeans, and one had really to protect the farmsteads. That was part of the job as well. But that's we approaching the Germans, shall we say, as opposed to them approaching us. I think they were grateful for the fact that we would go in and say, you haven't had any problems on the farming side. Some of them, I think, resented us checking up on their presence or non-presence. But frankly, it was so short a period after the end of the war. I think in many ways they hadn't quite got over that fact, and we were the bosses.
Was there any involvement in the denazification program? I mean, were you on the lookout for certain Nazi figures locally, or
no?
Were you involved in any sort of investigations?
No, not personally, but we did have odd people who would have to go on to tribunals or courts martial. We also had certain times when volunteers were called for firing parties for people who had been condemned to be shot, and who shall be nameless, but one sergeant major loved the jet so much he was the first to volunteer if there were any shooting shooting teams needed, which is in a way rather sad. On the other hand, those people who had been condemned to death would have been condemned for a set and definite purpose, and I'm quite sure quite justly.
Did you attend any of these executions?
No.
What was the overall attitude then, that basically they kept out of your way?
That's a very fair comment. I would say I was thinking of subservience, but I think that might be, that is an attitude, whereas keeping out of the way is something, shall we say, is discretion from their point of view. And of course at this time I think that Monty had just lifted the non-fraternization rule as far as the other ranks were concerned, but he hadn't lifted it as far as the officers were concerned. That came later.
What did you think of the non-fraternization rule yourself? I mean, did you have a view on it?
No. I think that at that time, when, frankly, at that time, I hadn't enough to do to think about the job that I had to do, because we had to do these various patrols that were out, and S Company was a specialist company, and a tremendous amount of work had to be done. I mean, one or two of our vehicles had been in operation since D-Day, and everything had to be tarted up, got into apple pie order, plus the fact that we had a massive internee camp. So I was on the other side of, shall we say, a PW camp, which we had to guard, and that was a fairly hefty guard and a fairly hefty commitment. And really, I was being asked to do three things: get the company up to scratch and the vehicles and so on, training, because that had to continue, and this massive guard. And really, this additional chore of getting the vehicles and that sort of thing up to date, that was an extra which almost broke everybody's back.
This internee camp, who were the internees?
From memory, I think they were, in the main, more likely to be, what can I say, political prisoners, if that's the right word.
Germans.
Oh, Germans, yes, that's for sure. And perhaps political, well, petty criminals, I think, that'd be the sort of, not necessarily political, but petty criminal types who had to be kept behind bars until they were tried for whatever they'd been picked up for.
How did you feel about being on the other side of the wire?
I don't remember having any feeling at all, really. I think at that time it was, one was back in harness, one wanted to get on with the job, and at that particular time it was a fair task to do those three things that were necessary at the time.
Now, you mentioned training, and you were in the supports, the specialist company.
Yeah.
But your military career had been interrupted.
Yes, yeah.
In 43.
42, that's right, yeah. Not quite.
And a lot had happened.
Yeah.
In the development of tactics, battle, yeah, drill, and all the rest of it. Were you able to catch up quickly, or did you,
yes,
not find
I
it
think,
a problem?
Well, it wasn't so much a problem. Some of the weapons were different. I think that's the main thing. But, I mean, a 3-inch mortar was still a 3-inch mortar, and its use was still the same. We had anti-tank weapons, okay, 17-pounders. In this particular instance, I had my own specialist platoon commanders, so that they would cover the training of their individual troops with no problems. And, of course, one relied on them from that point of view. Other than that, one might say the principles of war don't necessarily change to any great degree, but the application can change in the light of what weapons you have at your disposal. So there's not a great deal of difference. That's what rather surprised me, because as you might have been thinking in that question, having been away for 3 years, I felt when I came up to this RCB I might have little chance of getting through.
And the last question really about this sort of period is, how did you get on with the other occupying forces? They may not have been about here.
No, we didn't have any of the other forces in that area at all. We really were very much on our own, and or with our own other regiments within the brigade and within the division. So there was really no contact at all.
Were you aware of the changing mood towards the Russian forces, the Soviets?
No. There was nothing really to bring that out at all. But we had no discussions, at least I didn't, with Germans. And frankly, in a way, it wasn't very much that we discussed amongst ourselves at that time.
So you weren't aware of the developments of the Cold War?
A bit earlier for the Cold War, really. And I think that came, this was just 1946, and really it wasn't at this time, well, it was just about literally a year after the end of the war. And although there may have been a cooling off, I mean, I'd like to perhaps look back at some newspaper reports at that time, but the Cold War as such, I don't think, it may have started as far as the Russians were concerned, but I don't think it was headline news.
Oh, and just one other thing, the black market.
Yeah.
Was there much of that about?
Quite a lot. I must say that there's one thing that I think I used to allow, and that was the question, because basically I was rather against it, and in any case we weren't supposed to do it at all, but we used to mess my companies at one time in that area, and I used to leave it as I took over a company which had already established, and I gather that we used to have a pretty hefty supply of coffee, which was virtually gold, and that we could in fact feed ourselves better if one just cast a blind eye in that direction.
Who would do it?
One of my officers, as far as I knew, but as I say, I cast a blind eye on that. But one officer was responsible for our particular messing,
and he would take the coffee to the black
somewhere.
Do you know anything about it at all?
No, I know a lot went on, and
but as far as you were concerned, this officer did it for the sake of the company.
That's right, yeah. And also it was done elsewhere on, I understand, on a complete battalion basis, because everyone fed like fighting cocks. It was most incredible. And I think that's a subject that one wants to get perhaps away from, because I can't point a finger in any one direction. All I can say is that from the most junior soldier up, everyone really fed extremely well.
Did you enjoy your service in Germany? What did you do?
It was very interesting. We went a little bit of sailing, which I haven't kept up, on the Mönnesee. We had sporting fixtures with other regiments. I played rugby at the time, cricket. And a short while we tried to hunt pig, but that was not easy. And that rather fell away. It was terribly interesting coming back and being on the other side, if you see what I mean, having been on the inside, having seen a bit of Germany and war-torn Germany, if you like, in being moved. And of course in the, almost from the days we went into Germany, from Moosburg on, coming up from Italy, there was always aircraft flying, either the fortress aircraft by day, Americans, or our own RAF by night. In fact, we had one, I think it was a flare, dropped in the camp at Weinsberg when Heilbronn was being bombed. Didn't cause any damage, but it brought it home to you that there was still a war on.
Did you have any bitterness remaining for the Germans? They had kept you prisoner for a couple of years.
Not really. I don't think I ever felt any bitterness. I think that might have been washed out on the pure relief that it was all over and one wasn't a prisoner anymore. And I think that is just something which, like one officer, brother officer later on I found, has hated the Germans 100%, but he'd lost his brother, had been killed. My brother was wounded, and if he'd been killed, I might have felt the same. But I think that one's got to keep a pretty open mind.
So you were with the 9th out at Haymarket, 46 to 47?
That's right, yep.
And what happened then?
The 90 and I was a TA battalion, and gradually TA battalions were being disbanded, and basically the army being run down to a sort of pre-war strength, I suppose. So that was that. And so once again I was in transit with a lot of other people, and I think I was given the option again, and I said, well, I want to join my regiment. And the choice was 2nd DLI in Burma, and so I shot off there, through the UK, and got into Burma and went up north to Mamio, where the 2nd DLI was stationed. And I had no sooner taken over a company, and I suppose it last in, but I was sent off to central Burma to be an administrative commandant, which is really administratively commanding the garrison of Maitilla.
Did you spend any time with the 2nd Battalion at all?
Oh, yes. But it was really a matter of... Oh, dear. I wonder if I've got it down. No, it's going on to weeks rather than months.
Did you get a chance to sample the regular atmosphere. You were a new regular, and although you've been a regular now for a couple of years,
yeah,
you've been with the Territorial Battalion, you've been with the 9th.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether you noticed any differences between the sort of atmosphere in the 2nd Battalion, which is a regular battalion.
Yes. No, I don't think... I think there was perhaps a slight increased formality, but really to notice that, I would have thought... No, I don't think that... We were getting back to... you see, the last stage on a company mess basis, for instance, on this occasion we were on a battalion mess, officers' mess basis, and with Silver and so on. And so we were perhaps all grouped together. Because let's face it, at that particular time, Tudy and I were still having a number of wartime officers were still part of that, if commanded by a regular, Simpson, second in command, who is still living near here. And a number of us were regulars, but pre-war regulars, not all that number.
Well, what was the role of the 2nd Battalion at?
Well, at that time, really, sort of garrison troops. They had been doing, you know, jungle sweeps against the Dacoity, but at that time, when I was up there, there was they held, I should say, if the troubles had started again. Because not very long after that, they went off out of Burma, and by that time, I'd done another stint at.
Well, we'll come on to that.
All right.
You were sent to be administrative
commandant
at
Mactilla.
Mactilla, yes.
Yep.
What did that mean? What was your job?
Well, basically, in the garrison of Mactilla, you had a number of units of varying shapes and sizes, and they have got to be administered from the point of view of looking after their needs and wants, if they're moving camp, to help them out, to take over an empty camp. If some other unit's moving in, then anything of an administrative nature which they can't cope with within the unit, then that's your particular job to cope with.
So and small staff?
Oh, very much so. I had 2 staff captains, and there's certain things, a question of equipment, stores, garrison stores, courts martial, courts of inquiry, and all the sort of peacetime type of thing that even people in transit. I didn't have a transit camp in Mactilla, but later on in Mandalay I had a little transit camp under command.
Did you enjoy this sort of work?
Well, this one was in a way heaven sent, because perhaps I'm a bit narrow minded, but basing our original TA pre-war, where we always worked hard and played hard, and the regiment was the thing, and woe betide you did anything to, you know, bring any disrepute on the regiment. So in a way I hadn't got out of the idea that there was only one thing in the British Army. No nonsense, there were no guns or no engineers, there was just the Durham Light Infantry. And going down to do an administrative job like this with such a variety of units, I mean, the first thing I did was to go around and see all the units that I was going to be administratively responsible for, and they varied so much, and you got a very good picture of what the army was about. And it gave me, it was heaven sent, because it shook me up and said, well, you know, DLI may be the best regiment, but there are lots of other people that form the army, and you know, it's about time you got to know a little bit more about them.
What about the Burmese themselves? Did you have much contact with them? The job wouldn't presumably involve a lot.
Not a great deal. The lot were employed, you know, civilian employed in messes, in cookhouses, and so on. I found them always terribly cheerful. When we got to Mandalay, there were quite a lot of Chinese, shall we say, Chinese Burmese, if that's the right way of putting it. And of course, they're inveterate gamblers. And any bargaining which you did in the bazaars, I mean, you never paid any asking price anyway. And if they wanted 100 rupees or something, you probably said something like 25 or something, and they would laugh their heads off. And then you gradually get down to, you know, say, well, is it going to be 35 or 40? And if you've got a coin up and flipped it and said, well, it's 30 or 50, great big beaming smiles would come out and they'd take you up on it every time. Yeah, they're nice people. And when we had to leave...
Was there any more trouble with the dacoity?
No, that's not in my time.
So you were at Machtela.
Yep.
How long?
About 2.5 months.
Still 47.
Yes, still 47. And then I was posted up to, I think it's a matter of convenience, but still in this post, which was meant to be a temporary one, the fellow who I was deputizing for came back into Burma. He'd been hooked up in Australia due to a shipping strike or something like that. But in the meantime, the battalion had gone. And they were downgrading because of reduced numbers, the Mandalay administrative commandant, which became a major appointment. So I was instructed to go up there and take over from a colonel who was leaving, which I did in August. And that 47. Was quite interesting. For August 47, yep. Because it was in the old Fort Dufferin camp, going back to sort of King Thibaw of the 1880s, and very impressive too, and it was a change. But there we had, in many ways, more people than Machtela, I think, because there was a Burmese infantry battalion, which was quite big. I'd also had a couple of companies of Gurkhas in the past. They were magnificent, but I think that's a story on its own in a way.
In what way? Sorry.
Well, I was just thinking that I didn't do any sort of operations with them, but two companies were stationed in Machtela, and so it was my first contact with these little fellows, and they were all so absolutely spick and span in turnout, in bearing, in looks. You felt their efficiency and their friendliness and devotion to their military life. It's just one of those things. You get an impression.
Now, at Mandalay, you had the same duties, I presume.
Yep.
Did you notice? I mean, Burma was coming up for independence.
That's right. Yeah.
Were you aware of that, or was there anything in
the air? Oh yes. Yeah. Oh yes. We were told all about it, and also the ceremony, which was really a very simple one, basically flag up and flag down, which was rather sad to see, particularly because in the bazaar, Burmese would be asking, why are the British leaving? Because it looked as though the men in the street didn't want us to leave, but the politicians had decided that we should be leaving Burma, and that was that.
You weren't aware of any opposition to the British then amongst the local population, apart
no,
from the Dacoity?
No, no. No, on the contrary, they were all very friendly.
So, after this ceremony, what happened then?
I was posted, because basically there's no job for me there, and so I posted down to Rangoon, or to Mingladun, which was just outside, which was the transit camp, and left my staff, which was what I'd been told to do the final clearing up, and I was there for a few months. No, it wouldn't be very long. Until finally I was off to Singapore, where I was posted out to a unit in the middle of the island, a place called Nee Soon, which was a garrison, Nee Soon garrison, where there was PAYCOR and sundry other administrative units. And the task there was to... There was a transit centre, the transit centre Nee Soon, and the requirement was at that time to enlist. They already had locally enlisted personnel, would be Malay, Chinese, whatever.
For what unit?
For any service unit. In other words, they weren't for, when I say service unit, shall we say, the Royal Engineers, the Ordnance, the gunners, but not for infantry units. And the idea was that they already had one school on one of the islands, Blackamatty, and they wanted the equivalent of about 600 to be turned out with basic training only and a certain amount of English teaching and so on. You know, basically, it's, when I got there, there was merely the transit camp, and what it amounted to is that I had to convert this into a training and transit camp, and I was given just an area of land and told to get on with it, which meant really establishing a camp containing accommodation, etc., for these 600 that had to be turned out every 6 weeks.
Had you had any training in this role as a training commandant? Or?
No, but I think that one's all one's army training was based on your officer training, really, includes the ability to pass on instruction, if you like, pass on methods, put over any particular aspect of training which you have got to do. And this was an organisational thing as well, which of course one has got to be qualified to do, otherwise you shouldn't be an officer anyway.
What were you trying to get through to them in 6 weeks? What was
the 6 weeks? Yeah. You had to try and teach them a bit of English. That's not necessarily the first cry, but I mean, the base thing is, if you can imagine, they have just literally come off the street, put into uniform. You've got to teach them the basis of discipline. You've got the kit, looking after themselves. And then you've got on to basic training, if you like, parading, marching, shunning, and unshunning, to get them into the ways of basic life, and basic weapon training, basic field craft for that matter, how to conceal yourself, and as I say, teaching them English.
Who were your instructors?
In effect, the whole unit really was divided into two companies. Each had a major commanding, and we had, I think, about four officers in each under the company commander. Plus, for each 30, there was a sergeant instructor, a British, and we had corporals of the local enlisted personnel, and who were English speakers, and they could cope with the, in the initial stages, the translations that one had to have in instructing, and they would do a certain amount of the instructing in themselves.
How successful were you in turning? I only had 6 weeks for each lot.
Well, the I was given, I think, a very good line in all the people who were coming up to this into this unit, because this unit was formed from nothing. So I, in effect, got sort of two company commanders given to me, the junior officers, and so on. But because they were all going to be in an instructing capacity, I think somewhere along the line, somebody, maybe the CEO of the unit, had said, well, look, we want good people. And I had a weapon training sergeant major who was extremely good. And so that I think that it was a successful unit. I don't recall anyone being thrown back. Occasionally we'd have to have someone who wouldn't go the whole way, either physically unfit or perhaps they just couldn't mentally adapt. But not many.
Did you get on well with the cadet Lee training?
Yep. Oh yeah, no, they were all, what can I say, very happy people in my opinion, very cheerful.
And when did you start there? Was it from when? Sorry.
I was posted there on the 8th of December in 1948, so December 1948.
And when did you leave? How long?
And
did
I left about June 15th, so I had nearly 18 months there really.
And where did you go then?
From there, I went off to a holding battalion in the UK.
Which one was that? The 6th?
No, it was the. It might have been the 6th, but I regard it as being a light infantry. It was, there wasn't such a thing as a light infantry holding battalion, but it was being run by light infantry at that time. And then I was posted from there to, at first, against my will, to the 1st Somersets, because at that